This week's episode of Shop Talk Show is sponsored by Environments for Humans, who put on a ton of great conferences. One coming up is the CSS Summit at csssummit.com. And there's a couple other ones coming out, including one in Hawaii that we'll talk about later in the show. Let's kick things off.
Hello and welcome to episode 20. God, is it 23 of the Shop Talk Show? I'm your host, Dave Rupert. With me is my co-host, Christopher Coyer.
Hello, listeners.
And we have a special guest. Chris, you want to introduce our guest?
Maybe. I feel like you and Dave go back, or Raji and Dave go back. I already ruined it. Our special guest is Raji.
Spoiler alert.
Thanks for being on the
show. Howdy.
That's very Texan of you.
I never say howdy, but I'm saying it today.
That's very Texan of you.
I know. Don't you live in the way north? You have no southern flair at all, really.
We say howdy here, too, though. We do.
Do you? Because it's kind of like
Montucky.
Yeah, what city is it exactly, or is that like secret information?
It's not. It's Helena, Montana. It's the capital city. I like to call it the armpit of technology.
I was just there. Remember that? So that was true. I was wondering if it was actually Helena or what. I literally was in Helena. I went to Jester's Bar.
Wait. You were just in Helena, and you did not let me know.
No, you were in San Francisco. It was a cross path situation.
You just went to Jester's Bar. That's like the bar where people get knifed.
Well, I don't know. It was in the day. It did look like it could get seedy.
That's actually the worst time.
Raji has one of the
coolest.
What were
you doing at Jester's in the day?
It was nice, actually. I loaded the jukebox up with some banjo music and just, I don't know. I had a great time at Jester's, so. I'll try to think of all the other things that I did in Helena, but Raji has one of the coolest domain names ever, raj.ie. How'd you get that? Did you have to rub some shoulders for it, or did you just...
I don't know. It's probably incriminating, but it's an Irish domain, and they don't let you have them. So I have an Irish friend who is an absolute gentleman that owns an Irish business and bought the domain and basically said, I'll buy it for you every year, and... I'll just point it to where you want it to be. So
nice.
Yeah, and I don't want to give out his name just because the internet police will come after him.
Totally. Let's not. But thanks to that guy.
That's radical.
That guy's cool.
So Raji also does KomodoMedia.com, which maybe some of you are familiar with. What would you say that is? Is that like the name in which you do freelance stuff?
Yeah, I don't do freelance stuff anymore, but Komodo Media was sort of like, to prevent from going to like sappy history, it was like my beginning business, like what I started blogging on, and it was sort of my space, then it became my business, and it's sort of like a half attempt at a website now, and it's not been updated in forever, and Komodo Media used to be like super, or a lot more popular, probably like 3-4 years ago. Now it's sort of just like, So,
yeah. So you've mentally moved on from that world.
I've mentally moved on, and I've also just sort of lost time to really almost do anything. So
I can't. You had to pencil it in just to go to the bathroom before the show.
Dude, I know. I have to schedule this. Like, I have this 5-foot gap between my office door and my bathroom, and literally, I will run to the bathroom, and my wife's like, Raji, I need you. So literally, I don't have any time. Like, even my 30-second breaks are being taken over. So.
Awesome. So Komodo Media was your breakout album. And in the sequel to that was Fine Goods Market, which you sell some deliciously fine goods.
Yeah, that was the next sort of like idea to create digital goods. I'm sure we've all, you know, as internet people at some point thought about doing that. And then there was, you know, Raj.ie, Raji, which really is kind of my favorite domain name. But it's sort of like this sort of, once again, everything's sort of like half-assed, you know. So like my Raj.ie is just like basically a glorified Tumblr with a sprinkling of good posts every once in a while. So I have a plan to sort of like consolidate and like really make a better experience this year.
Cool.
Yeah. I heard if you say you're going to do that on Kickstarter, it works out pretty well.
So how do you do that, Chris?
You buy a camera and you point it at yourself, put your dog in it. In your case, maybe your kids are probably cuter than my dog. And it just starts coming in.
Yeah, I actually noticed your project and you had raised quite a bit of money. But then again, you're doing something that's more for the people, right? Like it's CSS tricks.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like buying tickets to the fun. It's not really, I need this much money to do it. It's, if you give me some money, you can get access to this area. You know, it's a little, maybe not in the spirit of normal Kickstarters, but it's working out.
Well, if it works, it's smart, right? So I think you did a good job. And also, CSS Tricks is like this huge resource for like the web community. So that's awesome. I mean, I'm glad that people are getting into it and actually giving.
Heck yeah. Me too, believe me. Thanks, by the way. And we have some news and links. You ready to, should we hit these babies?
Yeah, well, I could start it off with a question here.
Please.
If you don't mind.
No, I'm not.
Question number one is, why is Apple's headquarters underground? Because there's no windows.
Waka 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 waka. Hey, waka waka. Ah, waka waka waka.
Do you see this URL that we got sent like 10 minutes ago?
That's actually where it came from. Dan C. Gold, I think he's in the chat room here, and dancgold.com. That's a funny joke. / that's a funny joke. And he's got like a random joke generator, and there's a lot from @idiot on Twitter.
It's so good.
This is pretty good. I will probably be borrowing this from the near future. So everybody, don't go like through it and like.
That's what I was gonna say. You're gonna know all the jokes.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm working on some new raw material here, so yeah, I'll keep building it up. So,
best of luck, dude.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Life on the road as a comedian.
As we were thinking, I'm sorry.
Dan. No, go ahead.
As we were thinking, you know, I just literally thought this the other day. I'm like, do people still work on jQuery? Like literally the core project? Like what's going on with that thing? I feel like it's been a while. It seems like I don't need it to do anything more than it already did. And right on the heels of that thinking, the jQuery 1.8 beta announcement comes out and it looks so awesome. I was like, I can't believe I ever thought they couldn't do anything more with it. But there's a couple of really cool things you can do. One of them is custom builds. So if you're like, listen, I don't use their Ajax or I don't use the CSS parts of it or whatever, you can just there'll be a custom build thing that you can strip out bits of it. So there'll be less people complaining it being
So it's kind of like when Sizzle, like the selector engine, was broke off. Now they're just breaking off other pieces and allowing you to like
totally
as you will.
And speaking of Sizzle, that's like way, way faster now. That seems to be updated every time. One of them is like, you know, like let's say you need to set up a box shadow with jQuery for whatever reason. I know you should generally not do that and you should use like a CSS class name instead, but whatever. Let's say you have to set a box shadow with jQuery using its CSS method, it now just automatically will vendor prefix it for you correctly.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah, so you don't have to like do, you know, add it 7 times or whatever with all the prefixes. It just knows, which is pretty cool. There used to be able to detect what browser you're in with $.browser, but we all know that kind of UA testing stuff is gross and you should never do it. So they're making the bold step of just deprecating that.
Wow, that's cool.
It'll be gone in 1.9. It's deprecated, so like suggesting heavily that you not use it in 1.8. So, but anyway, bold moves, jQuery. Good work.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about the $.browser. I've used it in the past just for, you know, quick things that, you know, just weird inconsistencies between like major browser vendors. But, you know,
Well, there's
it's probably for the best, but
yeah, there are some weird little. I remember I put out a little snippet, little like what was it? It was like an add-on. It was you shared that thing. It was an add-on to the boilerplate that was like basically allowed you to like CSS target with an attribute selector, like all kinds of different browsers.
And you like edit the UA string as a class name.
Yeah, exactly. It just allows you to do like sort of attribute searching through that UA string. And it's not like the best practice, but like, yeah, we're kind of not in the best situation either. We still have some weird funky bugs, especially for like bleeding edge CSS stuff. So I don't know. I feel like
today I had some problems with that. So.
Yeah, I had some problems too.
We all got problems today. I wanted to mention that, so everybody talks about CSS3, right? But CSS3 is so arbitrary. It's just like the state at which any particular module of the spec is at. And it just so happens that a whole bunch of them were at about version 3. And so people just started talking about CSS3. But there's plenty of stuff that's already in like version 4. I don't know. I can't think of any good examples right now. But for example, so Tab Atkins, who works at Google, lives out by me, and he's just doing some research for CSS4 version of color. Literally, you don't even think of, you know, you think of all the fancy stuff when you think of CSS, but literally color is in CSS3 too. And he's doing research for CSS4. Like, what could they possibly do with color to make it any better, right? And it turns out there's kind of a lot. For example, you could say background colon color and then use a function, so parentheses around it, and say like bright red. So red would map to some color, and bright would be some kind of like modifier to it that would adjust it in certain ways. Or you could say color vivid purplish blue or something, and it would those things would map and do fancy math in the background to get.
So like vivid would be like it would like up the saturation, kind of like less functions like brighten, lighten, and stuff like that.
Totally, yep.
But built into CSS.
Right.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, isn't it? I was like, maybe like for super high fidelity stuff. Obviously, they're not going to deprecate RGBA, HSLA, or using. It's just that the named colors thing was kind of a flop, according to Tab. You know, like nobody memorized the 700 named colors in there.
No kidding.
Yeah,
there's a lot of weird ones. Like,
yeah, there's yeah,
honey melon or something.
Yeah,
yeah, and they're all English, you know, whatever. Although vivid is also an English word, so I'm not sure. Anyway,
I think that'd be really useful. I can't wait for the day we can actually. Even though like preprocessors are great, like I can't wait for the day that we can step away from those once again and just say, hey, pure CSS coding.
The day will come.
It shall.
So we're going to step into, we're doing a good job. I said at least 3/4 of Shop Talk Show we want to dedicate to heart and soul of Shop Talk Show, which is user submitted questions, which we answer on air with our special guest of the week. Let's on the like a big steak.
A Fat Albert kind of a thing. Isn't that how? Hello. How did?
Hey.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was a pretty good impression, Chris.
Thank you. Sometimes these questions have to do with not with just randomness. Usually I pick them. If there's one directly for the guest, I try to work those in. Or questions that are related to him in some way. Let's kick one off. What do you got? What do you got for me, Dave?
So the first one's from James Basso, and he's asking, Raji, what made you choose Fireworks over Illustrator? On a side note, your Waltz Dropbox is awesome.
It's Waltz Dropbox. Some awesome illustration you did, probably.
It's actually not awesome, but thank you. It's like when Dropbox on Dribbble, they did that competition. Whoever wanted like Dropbox for life, they did like a bunch of rebounds, and I just did a Disney-fied version of the Dropbox. And yeah, So the question was
# hot drama fireworks or Illustrator.
Okay, so I'm in a weird state of flux on this whole, like, okay, so just to kind of clear up what I use each tool for, Fireworks is more of a replacement for Photoshop, and Illustrator is sort of like a separate beast on its own. I actually use both Illustrator and Fireworks. My issue is that, like, I still use them in tandem, so I still use I'll use Illustrator, then jump over to Fireworks to, like, add texture and things like that. Illustrator just sort of happens to be really sucky at texture. I've talked to probably, like, 50 different illustrators, and every single one of them is like, oh, I always take my illustration, I do all the vectors because it's great at working with vectors, and then I bring those vectors, or at least like rasterize those vectors or something, I bring them into Photoshop or Fireworks, and then I add on additional textures, because apparently Illustrator just bogs. My first illustration I really tried to do was this piece called Fatherhood. It was a Disney-inspired piece, and it was... I tried to do all the texturing in Illustrator, and literally, I was like, I'm an idiot. Like, it took me like 30 hours to do this thing because, and it was like 20 of it was working with the textures because I was trying to figure it out. And then I later found out that, like, nobody does that. Nobody does the texturing in Illustrator. It sucks.
And your style is heavily textured. I'm looking through some of these, like, weapons and stuff on Dribbble, and there's texture on every bit of it.
Yeah, on those, it's like, it became a lot easier. Now, I understand, like, texturing individual little chunks and vector chunks. Like, I understand the need for that. But it actually becomes a lot easier if you just take them in as a flat graphic and sort of work your textures over it. And so it's amazing the difference between, like, say, one of these weapons that I made before and after. Like, when it's an Illustrator document and then when it's gone into Fireworks, it looks totally different. Like, it's lifeless and boring in Illustrator, and then it's, like, vibrant and all kinds of crazy textures in Fireworks. So, yeah, I think that answers the question. Like, I sort of use Illustrator strictly for vectors now. Fireworks I rarely use for vectors anymore. But Fireworks I use for all my, like, I don't know, all my, like, UI mockups and things like that.
So are these textures are raster over the vector drawn shapes, or are each, or are the textures even raster? Or I mean vector.
Yeah, the textures are raster, and I sort of hate that. Like, the problem is that when you're working with, like, really nitty gritty, like, high detailed textures, and then you're trying to work with them as a vector, there's so many points and handles and so
right,
much.
There's got to be just a billion points on the internet.
Right. We're not talking simple circles here. We're talking, like, you know, handmade, like a paint splotch, you know, like how much detail there is and all the that. But then you're repeating that thousands of times over, and literally my, like, really awesome Mac just came to, like, a crunching halt, and I maxed out the limits of the memory. It was just insane what I did to Illustrator, try to figure out texturing. So they're all raster. I'm going to try to jump back in and try to do a little bit more vector texturing, but they're all raster for now.
Fascinating. Okay, James Basso, or possibly Basu. There's two O's at the end, which I think always warrants an O sound, but we'll see.
Like,
it's not Fireworks or Illustrator. It's both sometimes.
It is a lot of times, especially with Illustration. It's always finalized in Fireworks, if we're talking Illustration.
Hashtag hot drama. We got one from Dennis Gable, who's grayghostvisuals.com. Here we go. Are you ready? There for 1 second.
This one is, like, genuine hot drama. So you'll
is Dribbble a place to massage designer egos instead of, or as a place to post work and gain feedback from the process? He also asked, do you look at Dribbble as a place to share your process or a place to show works as final pieces of art? So, Dribbble, massaging egos or something more?
Well, this isn't just to me, so you guys are involved.
No, it's to you.
It's to you, Raji.
You have more followers on Dribbble than you do on Twitter. Did you know that?
That was basically the moment in my life that I realized, like, people don't care what the crap I have to say. They just want to look at what I'm working on. So,
well, it's just, it does mean that, and you have 10 times more than probably me and Dave combined on Dribbble. So people, you know, you're an artist, man. And so, and you use Dribbble a lot, right? So, I mean, you must like it, right? Or are you, like, a fan of Dribbble?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Dribbble. I guess I'll probably diffuse this hot drama a little bit just by saying, like, it's different things to different people. I think, you know, show and tell, which according to, like, the site's purpose, really could be, it could be about feedback. Oh, it looks like my son came in. Hey, buddy. I'm on a show. You gotta go. Love you. All right. So this happens all day long. The kids have been in.
Well handled. Well handled.
Yeah. So, all right. So to cut to the quick, like, I feel like it's a place for all things. Like, we don't need to clearly define what it is, and we need to stop moaning about what it isn't and what it should be. There's a lot of people that talk about, like, oh, you shouldn't put these angle, these, like, what do they call them? Like cam shots, cam shot. You take a camera and you take this angled picture of your iPhone, and like, it's like this sexification of the shot. And it makes almost, sadly, it makes like sometimes even crappy mockups look really good. So like, everybody likes it. And then people get, I think really what's happening is people are getting jealous because they're like, but my stuff is better, but yours got more likes. And really, I think the reality is, it's like, Dribbble's a place for mature designers, not people that are going to moan and be babies about stuff. And it's also a place for all those things. It's a place for feedback. It's a place for showing final work. It's a place for showing works in progress. And I'm sort of like, I cater to like the old school heart of Dribbble too. Like, I try to do both. I try to show final work, but I also try to show like, I show like works in progress. And I think that if you're decently mature about it, I'm not that mature, but decently mature, like, you should be able to post something and be like, here's a final piece of work. You get a bunch of likes, great. Post another piece of work and show an in progress and kind of dance in between it. And if it's an in progress and you only get like 30 likes or something, you only get 5 likes, like, don't get upset about it. Like, realize that you're going to have like varying levels of work, and the feedback can really help. I think it's a great place, but I think it depends on your attitude. I've seen a lot of crazy talented designers that didn't have any followers at the beginning, any likes, and literally they're climbing the ladder quick. If you have a good attitude and you keep putting out great work and you take feedback well, you're going to do good in it. So, your thoughts?
I like the sentiment that it doesn't need to be defined. Like, it's just a thing, and you use it how you want to use it, and other people use it how they want to use it, and whatever. Or is that short-sighted? I don't know. I am in a similar position as that I have this new app called CodePen, and it has a lot of similarities to Dribbble. Instead of screenshots, it's little bits of front-end code. And we're already running into some interesting feedback of people that not just want to define it per se, but somebody will find a bit of code they found somewhere else on the web, and they'll bring it over in CodePen, and they'll put it in there, and they'll play with it, and they'll save it, and now it exists on their profile, and it kind of looks like they own it,
right?
And then there'd be some comments that are like thanks for asking permission, dude. And you'd be like, I didn't anticipate that in building of this. I was like, I don't care what people play with it with. It's just code. It's just, they found it and they used it. It didn't look, in the few examples, it didn't look like they were trying to pass off work as their own, you know. Whereas I feel like on Dribbble, it's a little more clear. If I took a screenshot of your website, Raji, and I uploaded it to Dribbble, that would be kind of uncool.
Yeah. Teams do things like that on Dribbble too. Like, somebody will post other work, or like, all I had like Fantastic Hal that I worked on, and David Lanham's work was in it, his icon. Mm-hmm. And it helps that community with just a few, just like when you mock up within 400 by 300, or you're doing, like, people love doing iPhone design because of the restrictions. I feel like with a community, it's nice. It's a nice thing to say, like, it has no rules, but it's actually kind of nice to have some guidelines to be like, hey, if you're going to post something with somebody else's work, I think it's cool to just kind of say, this work is done by this person, or I got this code online from this guy, I'm trying to work it and see what I can do with it. I think guidelines like that really do help, and you're going to run into situations like this, not even with just straight up ripoff work, but work that looks similar. I mean, it happens all over Dribbble, where they'll be like, hey, dude, this kind of looks like this. And then this little war breaks out. And they're like, yeah, you said I copied. No, I didn't say you copied. I said it kind of looks like it. And it gets insane.
Huh. Wow. Good to know. I'm a little less plugged into the world over there. That's interesting. I hope I can learn and take some from that. So some guidelines may help, is kind of the point. I feel like, so have you heard of Forest too, right? I like those guys. It's like Forest with no vowel at the end or whatever. I feel like every other week they were trying to like refine their guidelines and like push their guidelines at you and put a big banner at the top of the site with a link to what their guidelines are. I feel like they might have taken it at like two extremes to the point where I was a little turned off, the point like, ah, just leave me alone. Let it evolve, man.
No blatantly self-promo work, but then it was like, you could tell people were self-promoting, but they would be like, oh, I'm still working on this and I'm a little indifferent about it. But then you go and it's like a live product, you know, and it's like, obviously it's final. Yeah, I felt like that was a little off-putting too. It's like, you don't want to be that restricted. And I've noticed something too, just like a little advice for you, Chris, that, you know, I've been on Dribbble since almost the beginning. And one thing that I've noticed is that Mr. Simplebits, Mr. Cedarholm, he doesn't really get involved in the drama very much. It's not like he steps in and goes, dude, this is what I meant it for. He just kind of lets the community work itself out, you know? So
that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
He's even a little more low-key than I am, I feel like. Well, that's an interesting conversation. So, yeah, we did our... Not a lot of drama, but we talked about it. We have one from...
The process versus works of art as finals thing, that's stuck out to me. Just because, you know, we learned pretty quickly at Paravel, if you don't show something that's at least a little mature, like, you get, like, comments like, your tea isn't kerned or stuff like that. And, you know, you get some, like, kind of just, like, nitpick, so we're kind of
you'd
like,
error on closer to final.
Closer to final, yeah. But and that's just sort of just in the sense of like, oh man, why? Oh, okay. You know, like we'd love to show process, and we do occasionally, but we mostly do the final thing. Just from like a sense, like
why would it matter if somebody did? Is that just because you now have to like babysit the post and go back and go, hey, yeah, dude, it's not final yet, like. Is that why? Or why don't you just post it and so your tea is not current? Like, well, maybe they expose some things that you never actually thought about. That's good.
No, that's actually happened too. That, you know, we'll post something and somebody's like, the Y looks like a J or something like that. And we're like, you know, they might be right. You know, so we'll like rework something. But yeah, it works both ways. It's like, you know, always be willing to get feedback, but it's just sort of, I think we always tend to do the more final stuff just because we're like, hey, we could probably just stave off a few, like, you know, you guys are dumb comments. Should those exist?
I actually had a talk with a guy that's pretty popular on Dribbble. His name's Justin Mazzell. He's an illustrator, and we've talked a lot about, like, even though it's not really meant to be a portfolio, potential clients may view it as such. And so if they come and they see some sloppy work, even though it's in between work, you're sort of just slapping around the paint, you're not yet done, they think potential clients may go, oh, well, this is what I see of him. This is where I'm scouting designers. So I'm going to go based off what I see. And that looks sloppy, which sucks, but that may be the state of where Dribbble's at. You know, potential clients might not see it as work in progress. So that's actually like a huge argument. And, you know, like I've put some pretty messy stuff up myself, and sometimes it's kind of be pretty like sarcastic about it, or I'll just be like, whatever, so what? So she's missing her nose and she has no body, you know, this is just work. I try to be blatant about it, but I think that's still an argument and something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, for example, I'm looking for some people to design a few things for me, a t-shirt and some other parts of the CSS Tricks redesign. I think it'd be cool to hire some third-party people. I'm literally only using Dribbble. I want to find some people that can letter some stuff for me, and I can't afford Jessica Hish, so I need to find somebody. Need to find some other people, and I'm just looking at some profiles on Dribbble and be like, I get it. Even if it's not like my favorite thing in the world, I get a sense for your style. They are portfolios. I'm a hiring design person, and I'm using it to hire people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that may sort of push away sort of the work in progress kind of people, and I honestly, like, how can you judge them?
Totally.
Some.
Justin Scott asks, I've been looking for using a WordPress for e-commerce. I'm looking into using WordPress for an e-commerce site. I'm thinking of using WooCommerce by WooThemes as the plugin for the functionality. Have either of you messed around with this? I put this in there because I know Raji sells stuff online. I was kind of interested to see how he does it, or if anybody has experience with this WooCommerce stuff or what.
I don't have experience. WooCommerce, my answer will be quick and simple. I use BigCartel. They're great. They have great customer service. Their templating is great. The only thing I don't like about them is that you're literally locked into the PayPal model. And I'm literally talking like stats for your products, literally to the point like when you see a sale come in, you don't even get to know what it was, or you don't even get an archival of your sales. You've got to go off to PayPal's. And we all know how much designers love PayPal. Like, you kind of interface and sort of sift through the junk and the slow times of like searching and all that to try to get to your customer's history. So BigCartel, great company, great people, fantastic templating, easy to work with. They make it easy and quick to set up a store. They're locked into PayPal. That sucks. That's all I've done.
So you even Fine Goods Market just points, even that root level domain name points directly to BigCartel.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the convenience of some of it, right? Like as a designer, like after a while, you're like, you know, I'm tired of like setting up servers and doing all that, and right, like and setting up WordPress installations and maintaining that. Like, I kind of want somebody else to take care of that.
Well, as long as you can do whatever you want, which it looks like it's clear that you can. I mean, you did whatever you wanted.
It's literally a BigCartel site. Like, it's not even like my, it's a custom implementation of a theme, but that's it. Like, it's
can
a
you like push through GitHub to it, or do you have to, how do you like edit CSS files in it? Do you have to use some like in browser crappy editor?
Oh, okay. So like the way that I set it up is, sure, you can push through GitHub or whatever. I just host my CSS externally. I'm not doing CSS editing, which you can do. They have like a crappy little text box that you can just throw stuff into. And that works okay. It's kind of like Tumblr. It's actually a lot like Tumblr. But yeah.
Okay.
It's my CSS is hosted externally.
Directly to his question, I have never used WooCommerce. I think I've heard some decent things, but it's just, you know, it's kind of like one of the many, many e-commerce plugins for WordPress to do that kind of thing. I suspect that it supports PayPal, but as most of these things do, I suspect it could use other things too, as well as like Authorize.net or whatever else. Stripe, I hope. Stripe's awesome.
Actually, to name drop a little bit to this fellow who asked the question, I know that Sean Farrell, designer, he actually contracted out a guy named Dan Philibin. And Dan is like a supposedly like really good like WordPress developer. And he did integration for his wife's very popular cooking website.
Yeah. Dan is from WP Coder, I think. And I think he's like literally just graduated high school. I could be wrong about that, but I think he's a young dude.
Hire of him, and I guess like they have a whole like payments integration system and monthly subscriptions to Dash and Dish and like tons of members on the site, and like maybe he could help answer that question is what I'm thinking.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Good. I think, well, WooCommerce is probably your best bet from what I've seen, like looking around. If you want to do the WordPress thing, if you're not doing WordPress, there's probably 100 other good options for e-commerce.
Shopify.
Yeah, like Shopify, Store Envy, lots of other ones. And if you're looking to like self-host, I did a site on Lemon Stand recently that was really good.
Also totally, hosted thing?
That's like a self-hosted. It's like a Magento competitor, Lemon Stand.
I like the name.
But yeah, it's all PHP. It's like it's no XML. Junky junk. It's pretty awesome. So
what site does like XML stuff?
Oh, like Magento. If you have a client that suggests Magento, like get out. Just say no. Abandon ship. Get out. But
it's very powerful. The back end looks nice, but yeah, templating it is a weird wild ride.
Yeah, it's like Amazon.com in a box, and then you you get like all this, you have to generate your HTML templates using XML and like, it's very kind of old schooler way to make a template. So, yeah, careful out there. There be dragons.
You know, honestly, things about Shopify too. I've heard lots of good things about Shopify.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Doesn't Snook work there now?
I think so.
From episode one.
Yeah. I think so. Well, shall we move on to the next question here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question is from Tim Smith of the East Wing podcast. Good guy. I had the pleasure of meeting him at Front End Conf. He's got an audio question, our favorite kind of question here on the Shop Talk Show. So here we go.
Every time I see one of Raji's interfaces, I'm like, dang, that is sexy, y'all. So I would just like to ask, how the heck is he so good?
There you go, Raji.
I got to say, Tim Smith, as a proprietor of a podcast, you'd think that we could... It's like the ultimate question, isn't it? Kind of a non-question. Anyway.
A designer wants to answer, like, why... like. It's like self-admitting that I'm amazing, and here's...
I know.
Okay. Given that you're amazing, how did that happen?
Given. Then that means I have to agree with the given, and I'm in the same boat. I'll just say this much. I won't say that I'm amazing, because I will say that, like, one is that I always look... Everybody only sees a limited window. They only see, like, what they... you know, maybe a quick screenshot or something I've shared on, you know, like Twitter, or maybe on Dribbble, or maybe they just see it in the portfolio. So it doesn't mean I'm a great designer. It just means that maybe I've curated a few pixels for that view. And I constantly look at other designers, and I'm in awe of, like, their ability to, like, information architect, or it's obvious that there are tons that are better. But I would say, just as far as, like, what I do and creating my own work and pushing myself, I don't know if this is healthy, but every time I sit down to make something, I always think, like, oh yeah, what are all the websites that you've seen? Like, what are all the webs? Like, how can this create a unique expression? Like, okay, so there's a lot of gradient buttons out there. And, like, I almost make decisions in design to sort of, like, and it may appear that I'm a trendy designer. I don't know if it does or it doesn't, but, like, but I always try to make things and say, like, okay, there's a lot of gradient header bars, gradient buttons out there. What's different than that? Well, you could go back to a flat button style, or you could do, you know, so I always try to make decisions that, like, to me at least, push the envelope just a bit. Like, okay, you know, choose a color that, like, people haven't chosen. Is it still okay for the client? Yeah, it's okay. Okay, choose purple. Yeah, I know that people say don't use purple, but we're doing it anyways. There's always a bit of, like, just do things different, you know? So I think that helps fuel. I don't know if that helps the answer. I don't know. I think maybe...
Good. I think that was good.
Yeah, I think one more thing that I would say would be just... I think when I started, like, lining things up and, like, trying to do things according to a grid and really nitpick and pass it around to fellow designer friends and let them say it sucks, that helps too. So...
Don't use purple is what he's trying to say. I'm just kidding. Just ruin your whole.
Yeah.
We should say that Neil Reinacher sent in a similar question. I wanted to shout out there. It's just kind of asking about kind of maintaining your skill level while, you know, like, because you got to practice a lot. I mean, of course, the answer of how you get good is you practice a lot, right? And then how do you manage to do all that while staying up to date on technology, which we all moves very fast, which you also do. But yeah, I think you kind of answered that. So,
cool.
This week is sponsored by our ongoing sponsor. Thanks so much to Christopher Schmidt and Ari, the proprietors of environmentsforhumans.com. I promised I was going to talk to you about the cool Hawaii thing they're going to do. So most of the conferences they do are these online conferences, like the WordPress Summit that just happened, or the CSS Summit, which the CSS Summit is coming up and both me and Dave are speaking at, so check out that one. But me and Dave will also be at In Control Hawaii, which is an in-person event. So start looking at flights to Honolulu. Yeah, I think it's in Honolulu. It's in Hawaii anywhere. It's December 2nd through 4th, so if you live in Helena, Montana or somewhere dang all cold, dying, then look into coming to Hawaii with us and hanging out. It's at incontrolconference.com. There's a bunch of awesome speakers there. Daniel Burka, I'm looking at the list here. Do you know that Daniel Burka was the original? He originally sketched the Firefox logo. I think John Hicks gets a lot of credit for it, but Daniel Burka.
Dude, I never knew that about Daniel. Really?
Secret fact.
Secret look it up. Fact.
Yeah. I could be totally wrong. Or did you Google it? Dave and I are going to be there. Dave McFarland there, who you're on the crossover episode with the Non-Breaking Space TV show, is going to be there. He's like this teacher in Portland, and he always does these talks about jQuery, although I'm not sure what he's going to talk about there. But he's always very eloquent, and like when you're done with the Dave McFarland talk, you like feel like you know twice as much as you did before. So that's in Hawaii. Check out incontrolconference.com. Thanks for sponsoring the show, dudes, and Ari.
Woo. All right, so we're going to power through here. We got a bunch of questions, some more for Raji, so we're just going to keep going. Aaron Bazinet writes in, says, so Raji, you made the jump into designing for the Mac with Fantastical, which, by the way, is awesome. I'm a web designer, but I'd love to get into designing for the Mac and iOS as well. What resources did you find to help you figure out how to build, deliver assets, decide what parts would be done with images or done in code, etc.? Also, how much help did you need from the developer or developers?
That when you read that question, Chris decided to laugh, and I think that has to do with like the "which is awesome" by the way comment. Is that right, Chris?
Which
is awesome.
All right.
I was thinking of adjusting our just build websites theme to like just build Mac apps. So how did you get started with Fantastical? Did you just crack open Fireworks and start noodling around and just deliver flat Fireworks files? Or did you get into Interface Builder and all that, or what?
No, I never got into Interface Builder. And actually, what really helped me was the fact that Michael Simmons with Flexibits actually came to me and he was like, I know you've never done a Mac app, and but I can see stuff in your style that I like, and I want to, you know. He's like a massive Disney fan. Haha, I told you I'd bring that in. He's a massive Disney fan, and so he was like, I noticed that you seem like your style is really like Disney and jungly and fun, and he's like, we're that kind of company. And so I would say, like, you know, for me, luckily somebody asked me to do it, so that helps. But as far as the actual technicalities of it,
Asked me to do it, so that helps. I like that. How did you get into designing? Oh, I don't know. Somebody asked me. Anyway, go ahead.
Honestly, but it's kind of true. Like, a lot of people struggle because they're like, I don't have any jobs, so what do I design? Like, it's kind of nice when somebody's like, I'll pay you to learn, you know?
Yeah.
I think so. Anyways, I think, you know, I struggled a lot. The developer definitely helped me a lot because I was like, well, in the web world, we ping files. Is that good enough? Yeah, for some things, but for other things, you know, it's just easier for us to draw it. So it would be like, it's just easier for us to know the gradient values. So it would be like, well, like hex values? Yeah, that'll work. And then the next app we worked on, should I still give you hex values? Well, actually, it would be better if you gave me RGBA values. Okay, that's cool. So there was a lot of like going back and forth with Kent Sutherland, their developer, trying to figure out like what he needed. And then there was a lot of studying of like just finding like top Mac apps, just opening up like literally how you might like look at websites and designing websites. You'd be like, oh, I want to see like the coolest looking websites. And then you pull up 10 of them and you're like, here's what they all share in common. They're all this or that or whatever. I did the same thing with Mac apps. So I typed in like the top 10 Mac apps and or the top most beautiful Mac apps and said, oh, so they've done this. Well, they pushed the normal Chrome and the normal UI past the normal, you know, past what it looks default. And then, oh, they did this special thing. And so I kind of broke some rules. And then I realized like, it's okay to break the rules as long as it's still a great app and it still works good. And so like the team there at Flexibits, Michael Simmons, he was really awesome because he was a Mac UX developer and for like many, he worked on things and he was like, he was part of the team. So he knew what he was doing. So it really helped. I guess the biggest piece of advice I can give is look at all the Mac apps that exist, you know, establish why they're great and try to follow their practices, and then get next to a developer and people that have done it before and get their take on it and ask them questions. Wow, that was long-winded.
It was really good, though. I was way into it. I was like, yeah, keep talking about stuff.
I started slobbering.
To add to that, because I've got a little experience in this now, looking back now, Retina Mac out, and I opened up Fantastic. And I was like, why? Well, if you can do a lot of things with system routines, like drawing gradients and shadows with the drawing routines, even buttons and selected states, and, you know, there are a lot of things that you just won't do. Like, say it's like a linen-y background. Typically, you're not going to do that with a drawing routine. But the more that you can do with that, the easier you make your life, because then when it goes to like Retina or you go through some kind of change, like it's all being drawn. It's all being done with math and with system draw routines. So I wish I would have done that more. There's more things we could have done that on. And so that was kind of a cool little lesson that I learned. So, and if you have a talented Mac app developer, it's pretty crazy. You can be like, just like CSS, except for more powerful, you can be like, so normally what I would do is I would just put a big, you know, feathered, you know, sort of like blurred object here to create shadow dimension. And they'll be like, yeah, we could just draw that. Sort of like, oh, that's cool. So you don't have to like export an image.
Fancy. I didn't know. Would that you, like...
Raju, would you recommend like mocking up like a weather Mac app on and putting it on Dribbble? Like, or does that get you into trouble?
Shut up. I know why you're asking that.
Well, that was sort of a double hot drama / should you question.
I think the weather ones are really simple, right? Because you're working with such limited information that like design becomes easy. And the more information you add, the harder design is. So sure, why not? Like, why not flex your design muscle and just throw something out there? How could that hurt?
Just to get a job or something like that. That could maybe work for this guy.
I mean, exactly. Like, I think that the reality is whatever it is, if you're a beginner, you don't just sit there and go, man, one day, like, somebody's going to ask me to do some work. Like, you never out there. Market is, you know, personal. Heck, just market as a exercise. Who cares? Just do a lot of stuff, flex your muscle. You'll grow in the process and constantly give yourself new challenges, even if it's all fake work. Like, fake it till you make it.
Cool.
That actually cool. I'm giving it. So
you nailed it. That was good. That was good. Well,
Rachel we Neighbor. Yeah.
Oh, we'll yes.
Yeah,
go ahead. We'll just Rachel Neighbors.
Yeah, I'm going to move to that one. We have time for about two more.
Good.
We do that. Rachel Neighbors at Crow Chick on Twitter is like a illustrator chick. I wanted to ask Raji how he finds the time to make so many beautiful things while leading such a rich life. Oh, I feel like this is the same one. Sorry, Rachel, but I feel like we covered this. It was kind of that like, how do you do it all question.
Yeah. The one she's hitting on those like kind of the like leading a like div- like
yeah. Right, because you're more than just a designer, right? You have children and faith and fancy stuff.
It's not shotguns.
Shotgun and roadkill and yeah. We got all that. So to Rachel, she's a cool chick. She's a anime illustrator and she does a comic. Ooh. And stuff. She's a cool girl. And I think she's a designer too. So I think the reality is like a lot of discipline. Because like the reality is that like I can't just like throw myself into the web and projects all the time. I'm not a single guy. I don't, you know, I have kids. I have a marriage that is both work and maintenance and rewarding. And so like I have to know when to turn it off. And I really, really hyper focused. Like if I'm gonna do an illustration, I gotta be like focused on that, and that is like my spare time. Like I hardly ever watch TV. I hardly ever watch movies. I literally, like, when I get off work, my time is with my family until their bedtime. Then sometimes with my wife. If my wife's doing something like watching The Bachelorette, which, yes, I do watch it with her. If she's doing something else, though, like this just with her friends or something, then I take that time and I utilize it. So I'm like, okay, it's time to start sketching. It's time to start illustrating, doing some other stuff. So the answer is I just focus on the things that are most important, constantly putting like the things that are at the top of my list first. So like, I want to be a good illustrator. I want to, you know, spend, like you said, faith, you mentioned faith. Like I need to spend time like in prayer and seeking God. And then I need to spend time, you know, with my family. And so those things are like my goals. And so I don't let a lot of other things come in the way of that.
Cool.
That's my
answer. Awesome. Well done. Well, the final question is from Matt Rossi, and he kind of, this is the nail in the coffin. Why hasn't Disney hired you yet?
I don't know. I don't know. Well, I'm not so sure, it's like Apple, right? Like Apple, there's so much intrigue with the company, but like, would you want to work for Apple? David, would you?
I think it would be tough. I think it would be pretty tough to work there. It'd be cool and probably some nice hardware benefits.
What would you do if you got the email today? Would you just say no? You already know you'd say no.
Oh, me?
Oh, Raji, if Disney.
Raji.
Oh, if Disney did?
I thought I don't want to know about you too, Dave, because I do.
Yeah, no. Okay, later.
It's hard to say. Like, if it was just like, hey, do you want to be our, you know, design for like Hannah Montana stuff, like I'd be like, heck no, you know. But if it was like, but if it was, it really depends which department. And also like Disney's not like, the way Disney is now is not the way that I, it's not the Disney that I fell in love with. The Disney that I fell in love with is somewhere back in the 80s and 70s and 50s, you know, way back in the day. I'm not even sure it went back that far, but yeah. So I think that like probably a better question would be like if Pixar did, because I think Pixar is sort of like the new Disney. And so it would be really hard because now I've got these conflicting goals, right? I've got like personal and then I've like family, and so I've got personal goals for me, which is like, dude, I want to go work for Pixar, or I would love to like be an illustrator for them, or do their art for all their like their movie sequences at the beginning and the end. And then you've got like, you know, my family and my dad and my mom that are here that need help, and that like my boys need their grandparents. And so I'm just going to say it would be really hard, and that's all I know.
What if it was like for a shotgun toting roadkill squishing Pixar movie? They're like, we want you to come in and do some sketches for the,
like,
some
character. Do the storyboard.
I mean, that's cute. Of course, it's amazing. And there's rare few companies that I would even consider. Like, I wouldn't do it for Apple. I wouldn't do it for Facebook or Yahoo or honestly any of those. I've had any of those. So, but most of those companies would say, Raj, you need to be here. And so there's a possibility, dude. There's a possibility. But whatever it is would be done with a full agreement from my family. Completely.
Good answer. Yeah, thanks for being on the show, Raji. That was a... it was good. We're going to wrap it up, I guess. Dave, do you have some wrap-up-y stuff?
Oh, I was just going to ask, Raji, we talked a little bit about it already, but how can people follow you on Twitter, Dribbble, find you on the internet, give you money? How does that work?
Oh, Twitter is Raji, R-O-G-I-E. Dribbble is Raji, I believe, as well. Actually, just type in Raji. And you'll either get a dude with a hockey mask, waterfalls, or me. So you got a pretty.
I'm doing it right now, you know.
Ever. It's not self-incriminating.
God, this is radical. Google image search is excellent for your name. Literally, waterfalls.
I'm black. Look at that. There's a black sultan-looking fellow.
Yeah. He is a jolly looking dude, though.
The clown is, especially.
I would trade lives with that guy.
Well, cool. Well, thanks so much again, Raji, for coming on, and we really appreciate your work. Everyone go follow him on all your social channels. Thanks for listening. Thanks, chat room, for coming out and groaning along with the jokes. We really appreciate that. Be sure to rate us up in iTunes, Shop Talk Show. I think the new podcast app came out for iTunes or for Apple.
Maybe
Apple.
You can rate us on that.
I think you can instant rate, so it's even easier now to rate us. And so, you should go do that. Just click 5 and you're done. And then follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show. And yeah, thanks so much for listening. Chris, you got anything to say?
Dying! ShopTalkShow.com.